all of us. Everyone at the State's Academic Medical Center. All working together to deliver complete care now and for generations to come. All over the state, including hospital and clinic locations from the Delta to the Gulf Coast. All for one reason. You, the University of Mississippi Medical Center. All for your health.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jimmy Stewart, Professor of Internal Medicine and Pediatrics at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. On the original Southern Remedy, we answer questions about all aspects of your health and share some of the latest medical information in the news. You can listen to the show on Wednesdays at 11 on MPB Think Radio, or you can subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy on your preferred podcasting app.
Good morning, and thanks for being with us here. And relatively speaking, I am Dr. Susan Buttress. I'm Professor of Pediatrics at the University of Mississippi Medical Center and a developmental and behavioral pediatrician. And today, we're talking about a topic that is very near and dear to my heart. Who is raising or helping raise our children? Who can take care of my baby so that I can go back to work to help support my family is a question with which many young parents struggle. So I know many of you have heard, if you've listened to this show at all, I've made many podcasts on early brain development, early child development, because it is so important. A young child's brain is rapidly developing, meaning literally millions of neural connections are happening each second in the first few years of life. In fact, that birth to three period is just of vital importance for brain development. But we continue to wait on investing in our children until they get into school. Why do you think that is? Well, today we'll be talking about why we need to pay attention to who is helping raise our children a little bit more. And I'm delighted to tell you that today we have Elizabeth Harris, a.k.a. Biz, who is, as she says, her most treasured job, mother of two. But she's also the executive director of the Mississippi Early Learning Alliance to talk with us about this tough issue. Who is raising our children when parents go back to work? You know, we've struggled a lot. Good morning, Biz. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I know you've worked very hard to get people to pay attention to this topic. And, you know, I don't want us to get into the political realm, but the practical realm of really why this is such a vitally important topic. And I'm going to throw something out there just to say Mississippi has done a really good job in supporting children at four.
Right.
You know, with our pre-K collaboratives.
Yes.
They're expanding. We are showing that a very robust, well-supported program such as those in our pre-K collaborative. That's, for listeners, those of you who don't know what that is, that is our four-year preschool program in public schools. And Mississippi has set those up, not in all schools, but some, and we are expanding. The support has been very good by our legislators, and the data is excellent, showing that this is making a difference in helping our children.
Right. They're really the children that come out of the pre-K collaboratives, which are, you know, partnerships between Head Starts and public schools and also some child care providers in different parts of the state, that those children really are performing really well as they go on, and they're getting a really great start at four.
A great start at four. But here is my issue, and this is why I continue to remind all of us that we have got to make sure we are doing the very best job we can do from the very beginning.
Right.
And I know there are a lot of people out there, and I'm one of them, you know, the job truly is up to the family to raise that baby that they had, but sometimes parents need supports, they need advice. Our society is such a mobile society today, many of us don't have our parents around still to help us, or our grandparents right. around to help us raise children. Plus, in addition to that, some of us were not raised appropriately, and we need somebody else helping us know how we could do a better job with our own children.
Definitely, we know so much more about the role parenting plays in developing children. You know, when you mentioned we don't have our parents around, when my first son was born, he's 10 now, but we were living in the Delta, which was about 3.5 hours away from my own parents.
Right.
And I had a full-time job. My husband had a full-time job. In fact, I think it was like a 50-hour week job. We were working all the time. And thankfully, we had a wonderful child care center in Greenville. And Miss Louisa, I still think of Miss Louisa, who was his infant teacher. And she loved her children, the children that she cared for so much. And the fact, you know, because I was so far away from my own mother, there were things that I didn't, you know, I couldn't ask her.
Right.
I needed, you know, how am I feeding him properly? Am I burping him properly? Something is wrong. What is wrong? And because she cared for so many children, she knew stuff that I just didn't know, you know, and she probably knew stuff that my own mother didn't know because she just cared for children. That's her job. And so not only did she raise my own son because he was with her probably a lot of times more than with me, Miss Louisa taught me how to be a mother, you know, raised me as a mother. So
right.
I think that's something that we don't think about, you know, how child care teachers and early education teachers for specifically babies and toddlers are doing that critical work of caring, educating, and protecting our own children, and then also helping us and teaching us.
Mothers raise their right. children. And so I think, listeners, I wonder if some of you have stories such as that. I'd love to hear you join in early with your thoughts and your stories about childcare. Who raised you? Who helped you raise your children? Give us a call at 1-877-MPB-RING. That's 877-672-7464. You can send an email to family@mpbonline.org as we step through this topic that I just think cannot be more important. Before we go on, you know, listeners, you know I always like to throw out numbers to you just to sort of set the stage. So let me give you a few things. There was an article in New York Times back in 2021, and the data has really not changed very much. The United States, now I'm not talking about just Mississippi, the United States ranked 17th among European and Latin countries for the amount that governments spend on child care for toddlers. That's that very young child. Okay, you would expect this. At the top of the chart is Norway. They spend nearly $30,000 a year per child on child care. $30,000 a year. Okay, I'm going to jump down the chart, down to us at 17. Germany at number 5 spends over $18,000. New Zealand at number 10 spends $10,300. Hungary at number 15 spends $7,000. And the U.S. at 17, guess what they spend?
Oh, I don't even want to guess.
$500. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me was just a stark reality out there of what what we are doing, not doing, not valuing, where we're placing our money. And, you know, again, we've talked on this show and others about workforce and the value of workforce. And Mississippi has been very, very lucky in being able to bring in, with our talented legislators, et cetera, bringing in incredible industry. But we continue to hear there's difficulty in maintaining the workforce.
That's right.
And some of these are very high-paying jobs that will pull people not only out of poverty, but into the middle class. So two things. We need our talented workforce that's out there, because we have some, able to work and not feeling like they can't trust people to help them with their child care. That's
right.
One.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, we need to build our workforce from the very beginning, correct?
From the first moment, right? Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we know how critical those are. I mean, I know you on the show talk about it all the time, the importance of those early years, you know, how fast our babies are growing. I mean, they're just little sponges. All of you who have children or grandchildren or nieces or nephews or godchildren, you see just how wild it is that they grow. And so the fact that we're only, I mean, I think that's blowing my mind that as a country, as a nation, you know, those years are so critical, and we're spending the least amount of money possible to support, you know, that window of time around care. And, you know, most parents, mothers and fathers are going to work right now, right? And so in some cases, you can rely on a grandparent, an incredible grandparent. But a lot of times grandparents are also working these days.
Right.
And so, you know, I tell the story all the time. My son was about one when we moved home. I live in Laurel, and we moved home to Laurel. And my mom was sick, and I had a baby. And so I decided to take off work for a time to just care for everybody, you know, be a caregiver. Mm-hmm. And then I was offered an incredible job to work with the Tallahatchie River Foundation. I knew it was going to change. You know, I knew it was an opportunity I did not want to pass up. And I could not find childcare. Mm-hmm. I called every childcare facility in the whole county, and nobody had full-time spaces available. And so, mm-hmm. And my mother was sick, and my husband worked in Hattiesburg, and my father was working full-time. You know, who was going to take care of my little person? So it was going to get down to a choice of I'm going to take this job or I'm going to take care for my child. You know, I couldn't mm-hmm. do both.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, I was able to piece together some care, mm-hmm. different pieces that were going to work really well for him. And I was able to work part-time. But most people in Mississippi are making that – parents are having to make that choice in a lot of cases, right? They're either sitting on waiting lists for child care, they're putting their child, you know, oh, I'm pregnant, I better put my kid on a waiting list right now.
Right.
If you want to keep your job. So it's a hard balance for sure.
And then being able to afford it. That's
yes.
another
oh,
thing
gosh.
We'll talk about
yes.
as we go through the show. Afford it. And is it worth working, or are you going to end up at ground zero with, you know, you pay as much for child care as you do, as you make?
That's right.
Plus, I will say, people who own child care centers do not make huge bucks, right?
Oh, no. They make, I mean, I think the Bureau of Labor Statistics says it's about an average of like $9.50 or so, not maybe even none less than that. And we recently did a study with the social sciences.
$9.50 an hour. You're talking about the child care workers.
The child care teachers, yes.
Because the people who own child care centers cannot afford to pay more than
right,
that. Right,
right. Well, we, there's a child care center, a really wonderful one here, who told me that last quarter she did not pay herself a salary as a child care owner. Because she could not, you know, she has to charge what she charges to cover the cost of payroll and insurance and everything. But so she just decided, you know, I have to make sure all my people have money, so I will not take a salary this quarter. Can you imagine? Can you imagine a business doing that? But it's
not for long.
Not for long.
Not for long.
But she knows parents can't pay more, and she knows that she has to pay her child care teachers because she knows the critical work they're doing, right? They're making sure those babies stay healthy. They're cleaning the rooms. I mean, child care teachers do everything. They read to the babies. They sing to the babies.
Yeah. So. Okay, we're going to take our first break. This is such a tough topic. When we come back, listeners, I'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts? What did you do when mm-hmm. you were raising your children? Or did you help someone else raise their children? What do you think about this topic? It's hard. I know everybody thinks they should get paid more. Send that email to family@mpbonline.org. Who's raising your children is a topic we're talking about today. Welcome back, and thanks for being with us here on Relatively Speaking today. I am Dr. Susan Buttress here with Biz Harris from the Mississippi Early Learning Alliance, and of course, Abram Nanny, my producer, who, Abram, I forgot to even say hello to you this morning.
Good morning. It's okay. It's okay. I'm back here just listening to what's going on.
Well, I know you don't have children of your own yet, but
I didn't think it was much of my place to say very much yet, so.
Certainly, it always is, because it's not just about those people out there who have children, whether you choose not to have children or you choose to have them. It's about how our citizens end up, what our workforce looks like, who we as a state become. And I know we have listeners from Louisiana and Alabama and Tennessee, and I'd love to hear from you too, because I think it is about us and it is about the South. And unfortunately, we tend to be the lower investors in childcare. Some of that may be because of poverty. Some of it may be about other issues. But let me just go back to the U.S. a little bit further, where we stand as a country. Out of 185 countries with available data, the United States and New Guinea are the only ones whose citizens are entitled to no paid parental leave.
Wow.
Now, parental leave without pay. So you get, now there are lots of countries that have paid parental leave, but we're the only two that decided to implement no pay, but you can take off. Your job's protected for a while, and I think it's somewhere around 12 weeks or so, maybe up to 4 months for some. It depends. But in Europe, parents have paid leaves for 14 months on average, and children commonly start public school at the age of 3. Not 4, but 3. Mm. So, just throwing a little bit more out there to let you know where we really stand as a country. I think we need to be educated to be able to have opinions about this. So, really knowing what's going on is important. All right, now we have a first caller, and I'm happy to hear from, is it Merrill in Meridian?
This is Merle.
Merle. Hi, Merle. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Thank you, too, for having me, too. This is a great topic and everything, too. You know, it's sad. It really is a reflection. What we spend our money on is a reflection of our values as a society and the fact that we don't, really, we hardly support early childhood intervention in this country at all. You know, now it would be different if you wanted tax breaks for the wealthy or defense spending out the wazoo and everything. That would be a different story. But it's a shame. It really is for the wealthiest country in the nation in the world. You know, to not have increased. You know, childcare and everything too. Look, I won't keep y'all, but I'll end with a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. I'm convinced that if we are to get on the right side of the world revolution, we as a nation must undergo a radical revolution of values. We must rapidly begin to shift from a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented society. When machines and computers, profit motives, and property rights are considered more important to people, the giant triplets of racism, materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered.
Wow.
I always go back to that. So we've got to shift our values, you know. put our money where our mouth is. So thank you.
Thank you so much. What a great way, Merle, to start this off, because that's a beautiful quote from Martin Luther King, and it is so true. We have got to shift our values. You know, speaking of valuing probably our most valuable commodity, I would say, our children, you know, to not take care of our most valuable commodity seems to be such a travesty, and I'm not sure why we continue to need to spend so much time on this topic. But I think some of the issue is we really haven't talked about it enough.
Right.
People don't know the real data. They don't know the real statistics. And they don't know what other countries are doing.
Right.
And so I hope any of you listeners out there who think some people need to know more about this, and please feel free to share our podcast. You know, you can just go to your favorite podcast app, search for Southern Remedy, Relatively Speaking, on this date, and share it. Mm-hmm. Because I do think that some of it is just lack of information.
Absolutely.
I hope.
You know, I think there's some really cool things that are happening, because we know, you know, there's a neat map that the Children's Foundation of Mississippi has, where in their most, I think the most recent Kids Count report, or maybe their county fact books, if you go to their website. And they have a map of every county in Mississippi and what access to childcare is versus the number of children under age 5. So you can go and see how your county stands up. So, for instance, most counties in Mississippi do not have the number of childcare slots or Head Start slots, because you know, Head Start is also has early Head Start, so they can they take care of the babies too. Not because Head Start just does 3 and 4 year olds, and then early Head Start does the little ones. Anyway, that map can show, you can go and see exactly how your county is doing, and does your county have enough child care for the number of, or Head Start for the number of children you've got, or does it need more? And one thing that's cool is that there are some tax credits for businesses who want to support child care, who want to offset the cost for their employees. So knowing that it's such a critical piece of parents going to work, knowing that we want the child care to be as high quality as possible, because there are children, those even when, you know, we're talking about, you know, 6-month-olds, those are our first teachers, right? Our children's first teachers. So those tax credits can help sort of offset the cost for parents, so the parents can afford the care and the care can be great. So I love that map, and I love those tax credits, because I think anything that helps us get more care and, like, tells us how we're doing.
More care and better care.
More care and better care.
More better care.
More better care.
You know, we were talking about this between the break, at the break, Biz and I, that we know, listeners, that you have some stories about your upbringing and how you were raised, and perhaps that incredible child care worker that helped take care of you, or perhaps it was someone else. Maybe it was in-home child care. But we'd love to hear those stories about how you feel like that ultimately may have impacted your life. So please call in with your stories or your thoughts. I think Merle had that wonderful, beautiful start for us, but I want to hear from you about your thoughts about this topic, and then perhaps a story about your childhood, or as a parent who helped you out. Give us a call, 1-877-MPB-RING. That's 877-672-7464. Another little bit of data that I want to throw out there is in our growing child care crisis, and the fact that you, Biz, brought up the fact that you couldn't take a full-time job because you couldn't find decent child care for your baby at the time. the economic impact is tremendous. And since 2018, the impact has been rising by $122 billion annually in lost earnings. Now, that's, to me, unbelievably staggering.
Right. We there was a survey of some human resources professionals in the north part of the state recently. And of the issues, we asked them basically, what are the things that are keeping you from being able to hire people? You know?
Right.
And this one, I can't remember if it was the first or second top thing were related to childcare. But I think the first and second thing were both the people I want to hire can't find childcare, or they, you know, they chose to not take a job because of childcare. And then I think that in terms of lost earnings, there we also heard from some folks down in Jones County where I live that there are people who are having to take off work when, you know, their child is sick, or when they, you know, so that that economic impact of either not being able to take a job, of lost wages, or even, you know, of absenteeism from work. So I'm sure there are some business leaders out there, or folks who are thinking about, you know, how I bet there are people who have those kind of stories too, right? Like, oh, I really wanted to take a job, or I had to leave my job because I lost my childcare slot.
Let me give you another piece. For infants, the average costs of center-based childcare or care provided in non-residential commercial buildings is more than in-state public college tuition in 34 states. Now, that's not saying that childcare centers are charging too much. That's saying that in-state public college tuition is subsidized, right? Subsidized. And so, and it should be.
I don't want to take
away from that. It should be. But we are starting, you know, we continue to find more value in subsidizing and understanding, not more value, but a better understanding of substituting our colleges and universities, our high schools and elementary schools. And then we just keep not doing the babies. Mm-hmm. We got to do the babies.
Yeah. We did the math in Jones, a teacher at Jones College and I did the math and discovered that you could go to Jones College for a year for about $3,500, but if you put an infant in childcare, it's going to cost you about $5,000. So that, you know, that's pretty crazy. But of course, I mean, and there are lots of reasons for that. So you're right. I mean, that is definitely a big number that blows your mind.
It does.
There, I'm thinking about all the things that happen in our babies in their classrooms, in those early classrooms. One of my very first jobs, I was volunteering in a Head Start classroom, an early Head Start classroom, and we would teach the children how to brush their teeth, and we would, you know, it wasn't just snack time. It was really, you know, we would read so many stories and practice all the letters. I just think it's so, I think that's one of the things too. A lot of times when you're thinking of childcare or early Head Start, you think, I put my baby there, or that baby is there, and it's daycare. You know, the parent, they're just watching the baby sleep. And that, we know it's so much more than that, right? Like if you've toured a childcare,
right.
And so often, I mean, so many of our people are doing really incredible things, right? They're reading, they're singing, they're doing all those things we want that we know build babies' brains.
Right. And that's exactly what it is. It's brain building. And so, you know, if we have children in childcare centers that are not robust, good, monitored well, et cetera, then we may end up with a four-year-old in that pre-K collaborative who is not healthy and ready to learn. Mm-hmm. We know so much more. I learned how to read in first grade. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We now have, because I just didn't have it presented to me before. I really did not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was another reason, but But nowadays, children are learning and recognizing their letters at 2, 3, and 4. It's not because they are savants. It is because people are exposing them to that repeatedly.
Right.
And we know that can happen, and that, that our children can know so much more than we ever did. And so that's why I think you and I both felt like this show was so important, to get that word out that we have got to pay attention to that really young child.
Right. Okay.
Listeners, what do you think the solution is? What do you think we need to do? We are talking about taking care of our children when they are young. Who's raising our children? Welcome back, and thanks for being with us on Relatively Speaking today. I'm Dr. Susan Buttress, here with my producer, Abram Nanny, and Biz Harris from the Mississippi Early Learning Alliance. We're talking about, we need to pay attention to who is helping raise our children. We need the best help possible. And so I want to talk in a few minutes about some pretty surprising facts we know about childcare. But before we go to that, I'd like to go back to the phones. We have Pat in Mobile with a comment about maternity leave. Hi, Pat.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. So I had two quick points. I say quick. Hopefully they're quick. One of the things in listening to you all I thought about is a conversation that I have often now about how the emphasis for females was shifted from being in the home, and how that kind of became looked down upon to be like a housewife or to be stay at home. And, you know, my generation, I graduated in 2009, so my generation was taught to go to work, and, you know, you have to keep your house clean and do the daily things, but you can go to work and you can have the kids and you can go to college and you can do all the things. And now at this point, I've reached a point of the question, at what cost? Yes, women can do all of these things, but at what cost? Maybe being the stay-at-home mom was helpful from birth to five, because the baby's brain, it grows and takes as much information in as possible during that time. You build connections. And so I think in trying to encourage women to do more, I think generally we could have lost sight of the importance of not doing all the things and really focusing in on the kids. And then I just think about my own experience staying at home with my first child and like being kind of insulted by my husband, like, I can do all the things, I can go to school, you know, but he encouraged me to just stay at home and let him take care of everything. And I understood the importance of it then. And now we aren't in that same situation, and I have a 2-year-old, and I wish that I could stay at home. And so it's just, I'm thankful for the growth, but I do see, I see what, in general, people were trying to do, but I also see the effects of you can do it all. The question is, at what cost? And that's my comment.
So I hear what you're saying, Kat. It's Kat, not Pat, correct? I recognize your voice, and thank you for calling in. You always have such good insight. So I hear what you're saying. What do you think about this? What do you think about the fact that there are some women who truly want to have children and a family, but also desperately want to contribute to the workforce, to have a profession of their own? And I have heard many, many in the political world say, and others, not just politicians, but many others say, well, it's a woman's job to stay at home and take care of her children. But there are many very highly productive, highly contributing to the workforce women out there. I'm not sure it has to be an either or to do a good job with raising children. And I'm just going to give you my personal case in point. I was raised by two working parents. My parents worked in the retail business and had a store. They both contributed a lot to my life. But I had grandparents who helped raise me, grandmother. I had nannies who helped raise me. And they were all very, very good and enhanced my life. I think I turned out okay. I worked full-time except for 6 months in my entire life as a mother. I have five children. And I hope that they all believe they turned out very well. I think they did. And I believe that it is a doable thing. Here's the difference. My difference, my family's difference and my difference in raising my own children is that I could afford to spend the money. And yes, it was expensive to spend the money on very good childcare when I needed it. It was very expensive, but it was something that I put value in, and I cut back in other areas so I could spend the money on that. For women out there, parents out there, fathers out there who cannot afford to spend that money, is it fair that they can't find decent childcare for their children that is safe and effective? And, you know, let's just make a point. We have been talking about, I'm going to just say the word, expanding health care coverage, Medicaid expansion. We have been talking about that, adding a work requirement for that. So we're going to require people to work to get health insurance, but we're not going to help with child care and finding a safe place for their children to be. So it's kind of a catch-22. It's a difficult area. And so I just want us to think through it as we are talking about this topic. But Kat, I know that you're an awesome parent and you've done a beautiful job. And so I appreciate you bringing that to the forefront. Biz, I don't know if you have a thought on that.
You know, I was just thinking about how I had that with my first child. I did have a good chunk of time where I chose to stay home. And I treasured that time. And then with my second child, I was in the similar boat, Kat, that I was working, and I was working in a job that I really loved. So, you know, I think that there's space for all of it as long as the child, I think the goal is to get the child what it needs, right?
Right.
Like and of course what the mother and the father, what they need. 'Cause in some cases, it is not actually tenable to live without two working parents, right? Like, it is expensive right now in our world. And so in a lot of cases, it's not really a choice for either parent.
Necessity.
It's a necessity.
Correct.
Right? So,
right.
So I think in that case, you know, I guess that's actually what I want. I want it to be what is best for the child. And if it is best for that parent to be able to be with that child, then I want the parent, no matter, regardless of circumstance, to have that choice.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think, but and when you, and to Susan's point, when you're both working, that you want to make sure that wherever your child is, whether it's with a grandparent or with, you know, a nanny, or with a home-based child care provider, or in a child care center or Head Start, that they're getting something wonderful and that they're being nourished and cared for.
And
so
cared,
yeah,
for. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Kat, thank you so much for that call. I appreciate your insight, as always. We're going to stay on the phones. We have Tyler and then Tanya, and I want to make sure we get to both of those. Tyler in Hattiesburg, let's start with you. Tell us what your thoughts are. You have a comment on child care.
Yes, ma'am. How are y'all doing today, ladies?
Doing great. Thank you for calling. It's nice to have a guy call in about this topic again.
Yeah, I'm sure I have a little bit of a unique perspective here. I currently watch my son during the day. He's about a year old. And So when it's me and my wife's first child, so when she got pregnant, we were, very excited. And then we have the baby, and she had to get a C-section. So, you know, she was out of commission for a few days. Mm-hmm. We were looking into getting daycare, and it seemed that every daycare provider we talked to, there was an 18-month waiting list year wait list. And these are, you know, like if no one tells you about these things beforehand, you know, it's like, oh, well.
Now what are we supposed to do?
Yeah, so I'm able actually to work night shift at my job so I can watch him during the day. But it's just a problem that I think, like y'all were saying, that there's not enough daycare providers. And then also I think there's a wage problem here because child care is also very expensive. In some circumstances, it's easier for the mother to stay home with the child instead of paying for child care. Yeah, you know?
Right.
You are absolutely right. And, you know, our average income here in Mississippi is below the mean in the U.S. I think it's around 30-something thousand, which is lower than the national average. And if you look at the cost of child care at, Biz, what is that yearly?
For an infant, it can be, you know, $4,500, $5,000.
So for example, in Mississippi, Mississippians pay, I think it's around 17% of their income in Mississippi for an average of married families' income. Let's see, the cost of infant, I just found it. The cost of infant care ranges from 7.3% of a married family's income in Mississippi to 16.7% in California. So California pays at about 17%. Mississippi is
7%. Like 7 to 10.
But if you think about that, 10% of your income on child care.
On one child. What if you have two?
On one child. If you then have to buy food, pay for gas, pay for your living expenses, pay for utilities.
Mortgage or rent.
Yeah, you have a lot. So that's a lot of money. And so, Tyler, I'm really happy that you and your wife were able to work that out. But I just want to throw this out there. That's hard, isn't it? That you are now responsible for your young child when you really should be sleeping. I'm hoping you're getting some sleep out there.
Well, we're able to work it out to where sometimes she'll go into work a little later, so I am able to get a few hours of sleep. But you're right, it is hard. And there's not very many resources for young mothers, especially. I always like to comment that Mississippi's not pro-life. We're pro-birth. We love, you know, women having children, but we don't do anything to support, you know, after birth care.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, the fact that you said, I wish you could have seen my face when you said your wife had a C-section and was out of commission for a few days, right? Thinking about your body healing after something like that.
It really should be, you know, a couple of months.
Right.
To just heal from that, much less, you know, just get used to and be able to breastfeed like we recommend. Tyler, I love that. Mississippi's not pro-life. We're pro-birth. You know, what I have said over and over again is if we really care about babies, care about them from the minute that they begin in utero all the way through when they become those adults. We've got to care for them all the way through. And so important, you brought up an important topic.
You did. And I love, I think that you're saying that childcare is a women's issue, and it's a parent issue, right? Like here you are, you were talking about it being
a parent issue.
It's a parent issue. Yeah. And I think there are so many families that are struggling, and I want more people to know that it is a parent issue, right? Like a working parent issue. It's something that we're trying to work on.
All of us. Tyler, thank you so much for calling in, and thank you for being a good dad. That's important.
No problem.
All right, let's go to our last caller of the day. We have Tanya in Greenville. Tanya, thanks for waiting. I know you've been there for a while.
Oh, it's fine. This is actually Tanya Weir with Ready Nation.
Oh, Tanya, yes. Hey, listeners, this is a wonderful woman who is just an awesome advocate for children.
She is.
Thank you so much for calling.
And I really just want to thank you guys for this conversation. First of all, I'm in Greenville working with business leaders today, and they asked me to come here to talk to them about how to support children from birth all the way through. And I think that's really critical, and just wanted to encourage people to know that there are solutions for the problems that we face when we come together and really use the collective brain power that's available through all, you know, so many champions for children. And just wanted to also highlight the pre-K tax credit again, how important it is that business owners and companies in the state of Mississippi know that they can direct their tax liability to early learning collaboratives in their, a lot of times in their own counties where they live, which is such a beautiful thing. And then how important it is for us to continue to talk about, discuss, and just continue the conversation around the workforce behind the workforce, which are our child care teachers, and the ways that we can support them so that our babies can have that good, high-quality care that they need for success in life.
Tanya, talk to us. We've got a couple of minutes for you to do this, and I hope you will. Talk to us about that tax credit and the contribution to the pre-K collaboratives. How do people access that?
Yeah, so, you know, soon it'll be the deadline to file your taxes, and most of us, if we're working, you know, we will have probably a tax liability. So in 2023, my tax that was due was like $1,620. And I can pay that directly to the state, or I can send that to an early learning collaborative through the Mississippi Department of Education. And that money will go to an early learning pre-K collaborative that's state funded, and it will help with salaries and playground equipment and certifications and teachers' pay. It can be used for a number of different things. And I figure if I have to pay taxes, it should go to kids, right? They can use it, and it would be such an impactful way to empower kids just across the state. So it's a pretty simple process. They can contact the Mississippi Department of Education. They can also reach out to me, Ready Nation Mississippi. I don't mind, you know, sharing my information, 601-260-1848. And folks can go back and listen to this podcast and reach out, and we'll show them how to do it.
Wonderful information. I am so excited that you were listening to this and you called in, Tanya. Yeah. Again, thank you for being there in the Delta. That's an area where we know there is great need, and really appreciate you working with us. But really, all of Mississippi is in an area of great need for this particular topic. Mm-hmm. We really are. And so I think that ability to be able to send your taxes directly to those centers is a great thing. So,
and that definitely supports those 4-year-olds. I mean, that's how we started the show, is talking about 4-year-olds, and that's a beautiful thing. I mean, I think Tanya has this incredible the Ready Nation Early Childhood Investment Council, which is, she's recruited all these incredible business leaders who care about our state's babies, and who are trying to look for solutions. And so, Tanya, thank you so much for all that work, because those folks are really great, and they're championing all the things that Dr. Buttress talks about on her show all the time.
Yeah. Thanks so much. All right.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So, Biz, in this last 60 seconds, any last thoughts, anything you want to throw out there to just make sure everybody remembers?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think I really, you put me on the spot. There's so many things about this. I do think that, you know, we say that parents are the children's first teacher, and then childcare teachers are the very second teachers,
the
right?
The very second teachers.
And I think we do have to figure out how we can make that system really work for parents and also business leaders and those teachers.
I so appreciate all the work that you are doing, and just keep it up. And listeners, get out there and support those young parents who are trying to figure out who to take care, who can take care of their children. And think about supporting more money to go into child care. So thank you, everyone. Southern Remedy is a production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting Think Radio, and funding is provided in part by a grant from the University of Mississippi Medical Center and support from listeners like you. If you want to hear this podcast again, share it, or any other podcast, you can listen on your favorite podcast app, searching for Southern Remedy, Relatively Speaking. This show is a production of MPB Think Radio. I'm Dr. Susan Buttress. I hope you'll join us next Tuesday at 11 for Relatively Speaking, and that you'll stay tuned for NPR's Here and Now, coming up next, right here on MPB Think Radio.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.